Shelley Davies is our guest today, and I'm very much looking forward to having a chat with her. She's one of those people who is a complete powerhouse. In fact, she's one of those people who, when you sit with her, you realise, thought I'd achieved a few things, but compared to Shelley, wow, I feel like I really have just been sleeping today. She can get through a tremendous amount of work. She's always looking for different opportunities to extend and grow. Where she is a huge superstar is in two key areas. One of them is she's a specialist in doing amazing corporate writing workshops and training to help businesses, especially bigger companies, simplify their language and talk like real people, which I think is great. But the other side of her is in this keynote inspirational speaker side. She's got an amazing life message and she just shares it with people. And so often people who are coming to a writing workshop will end up coming out with life teachings and value around how they see themselves and how they can project themselves and who they are. So she's incredibly inspirational and I'm very much looking forward to you listening to her and getting a bit of inspiration from her today as well.
It's Time to Identify, a podcast from Rachel Claver from rachelclaver.com.
Welcome Shelley, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited about this. Can you tell everyone, I have done a little bit of a discussion about what you do at the beginning, but do you want to say in your own words what it is that you do?
So I have got to this point in my career by being a writing trainer, but I do much more than that. I really help people to communicate in powerful and fit-for-purpose ways. So I am helping people in their writing to use plain language, which just works across the board, no matter what industry or sector or whatever it is that you're doing. Plain language is the way to go. There shouldn't even be a discussion about that anymore. And then in terms of personal power, in terms of being able to start internally and be aware of your wants and needs so that then you can have more power in your own little part of the universe. Now, those might seem unrelated, but I can't separate them at all.
Oh, I think they are completely connected. I think one of the things that I feel about, well, I call it jargon. I mean, you focus on the plain language side. So if I talk about the other side, that jargon or the big words, I will often read other marketers' blogs and I don't understand them and I have a panic attack and I have to go and Google and go, oh, I've been doing that for years. Why don't you just say it in normal language? You know, But I think people who are not in their power often use long words to try and make other people feel like they're missing out on something that there's a secret society somehow know about it. Would you agree?
Yeah, there are lots of levels of the psychology and the complexity behind it. There was a study that was done a few years back called the Oppenheimer study, which basically said the more big words you use, the less intelligent your audience thinks you are.
That's
now, from our own perspective, we think if we use big words, it makes us sound smart. And that is what we got taught throughout our education. But this particular piece of work showed, no, if you can't just say things simply and clearly, your audience starts to wonder if you really know what the fuck you're talking about.
That's really fascinating. And I think, too, people would switch off at a certain point, too, so they'd stop understanding what you're saying as well, wouldn't they?
Oh, definitely. although I have been in situations where people are like, man, I can't understand a word that person is saying. They must be so smart.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to work years and years ago training early childhood teachers, and one of the things that one of the parents said, which I thought was super weird, was this parent said that they had chosen the early childhood centre because they felt that they would be worse at parenting their child than them. So it'd be kind of, that would be kind of the same thing as saying, you know, well, if you're saying all these long words, which was a really, really weird reason to do it. But it's that kind of same thing. You know, I think if your esteem is quite low, then it might make you feel better to be around people with long words because it might make you feel a little bit like, I'm surrounded by people who can use long words. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So you do empower people. I know that you've done like an amazing TED talk about plain language, but also telling a bit about your story. And you've got a fascinating life story that we actually cannot fit into the time that we've got, but we can't. But where did this change start happening to you? Like, why was it that this is the trajectory that you've kind of landed yourself on?
Oh, you know, I was just talking to someone the other day about how bad I am at pattern recognition. it's not one of my strengths. I turn a corner and go, wow, didn't know this is where I was going to end up. But I am pretty good at reflecting on things. And so about 7 years ago, I went through a major shift in my life that I didn't know was coming, wasn't looking for it, definitely didn't plan on it because I am not a planner. And ultimately, I was born as a fifth generation member of the LDS Church, which is usually known as the Mormon Church. Mm. And all of my family are still very active in their religion. And I have no criticism and nothing bad to say about it. So I just want to make that really clear, because so many of my strengths, my skills, the experiences that I've had were because of that upbringing. And absolutely, my ability to just love people, just love all people, is because I believe that all people have divinity in them and are worthy of love, you know. So that upbringing has put me in good stead. But I reached this point one day where one little part of the way that I had always lived didn't make sense. And it literally was about being with a man who was showing love to me, and in the beliefs of that particular religion, if we wanted to be together, we had to get married. Now, I've already had two fucking marriages. I don't want a third one, right? I also really wanted to say the word fuck, and I never had said it out loud, and I was 38 by this stage. Oh, no, that's not true. I told my ex-husband to shut the fuck up once. Yeah. Anyway, he deserved that. But that was the only time. Yeah. And because I am quite black and white, once this one little piece didn't make sense, and the piece was, if God loves me and I'm a loving being, why wouldn't he want me to be loved? That's ultimately it. Then I went, oh my gosh, now I don't know what I think. I don't know what I believe. I don't know where I stand. I'm going to walk away and figure this out.
Did walking away mean you lost family, or did they, because is it similar to other Christian sects or strains or whatever?
No, that was not my experience at all. I've got an amazing family and we're all still very close. It was hard for them, because I started living in ways that go against the way that my parents had raised me and the way that we've all always chosen to live our life. So it was absolutely painful for them, and therefore a hard decision for me to do things that were going to hurt my family when they are such good people and I love them so much. But ultimately, it was either live the way that I had been living and continue to keep them happy, or follow what now appeared to be my truth, which was to just discover things that I simply didn't know because I'd never lived them. Just look at things differently, ask questions, and live with the guilt of hurting my family. And I chose that path because I didn't want resentment to eat me alive. I've never looked back.
One of the questions I've got, because when I was through Teachers College, I had a couple of close friends who were part of the LDS Church. So and they used to come along to I was part of a Christian group there, so they were part of that. And so I know a little bit about the LDS faith or the Mormon faith, but in terms of the two things around roles of women in the church and also roles of Māori, like in your Māori culture, was there conflicts between those things of where you are now to where you were back then, or is those things not an issue in the LDS faith?
For me, in the way that I experienced the LDS faith, there were no conflicts around the roles and rights of women. So I'm the youngest of four daughters, and in my world, women were valued and precious and leaders and revered. I want to be careful. Men were there to give service and to support.
But no, it's interesting to me, because my experience, like as a Christian, like in the Christian time, which I'm no longer going to church, but that I had to break out. My breakout had to be around the way that I had allowed the concept of woman had to live in service to men, and that was I had to break out of that. So I was just wondering if that was part of that breakthrough for you, or if it wasn't really.
No. I always have felt quite powerful in my world, although I wasn't always confident enough to express that. But I never felt oppressed or restricted.
Which is
anything.
Awesome.
In terms of culture, my understanding is that the culture of the church comes first, and that other cultures kind of come second after that. And so there is some tension if you believe in Ngā Atua Māori, the Māori gods, and that worldview, or you could call it a religious view perhaps, and the Christian view of one God and Jesus Christ and all of that. So there can be some tension there for some people, sure.
And what about you? Do you feel like you've been able to develop and dive deeper into your Māori culture since you left LDS, or has that been something that was just evolving anyway?
Yeah, it's. I don't think that has changed greatly. Mm. It's something that I feel very connected to, and it's very much about who I am and my family history, and just being spiritual, just being in touch with Wairua, with things spiritual. That has always been part of my upbringing, whether in or out of the church, and so those things still feel very aligned.
So let's just take particular faith out of it. So like let's take Māori faith or Aries. Mm-hmm. Do you think that we've become out of touch with trusting that spiritual side of us? Do you think that's part of why people are no longer confident in terms of just standing up and being yourself? Is that what's underlying it for, do you think? Or do you think there's other stuff at play that's causing us to not show up as ourselves and not be, as you say, a badass and put on our badassery? Like, what is it, do you think, that's preventing us from showing up and showing people who we really are?
Oh, are you asking me to recognise patterns?
Yeah, I know you can't do that. Well, look back, Shelley.
Let's see. So in my world, I am surrounded by people. And when I say surrounded, I mean all around the world. You know, I've got this amazing tribe of people who I consider are my tribe. And they all have amazing spirituality and connectedness to self and self-awareness. And connectedness to the things that are intangible. So I am sure that in the world at large, that can be a challenge, but that's not my experience of it. But that's probably to do with who I surround myself with, right? So I'm selective. I curate the people around me that make me a better person, that strengthen me, that challenge me, all of those kinds of things. So I'm not likely to connect greatly with someone who doesn't have a strong connection with intangible things. In terms of people not having a voice, standing in their power and their truth, I think that's far, far more to do with media and just the messages about societal expectations and all of those things, just caring what other people think. And I spent a huge amount of my life caring what other people think. And it was it's very vulnerable. It took a lot of courage. It still, on lots of days, takes a lot of courage to go, look, I know that not everyone's going to like this. I know that not everyone's going to agree with this. I know that if I go outside right now in my boots with no bra on, that someone might go, oh, my goodness, look at her. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Because if you're not someone important in my world, then it simply doesn't matter. As long as I'm not doing anyone harm, right? As long as I'm not causing harm, I don't care if someone looks down on me. I don't care if it's not what society expects. I actually find myself very surprised when I hear someone going, oh, no, but I can't do that. Whatever that is, it just catches me off guard, because if that thing that they think they can't do is based on what would people think, I can't do that at work, or I can't walk around town with no shoes on, or something like that. I'm like, why? It always catches me off guard, because I feel so far removed from the person that I was when I cared what people thought.
So there was a time that you did care?
Absolutely. I'm a people pleaser from way back.
So how do you think, besides obviously making that big change, what are some practices or things that you've done to help move yourself out of that?
Reflection is a really, really big part of it. So every time listening to my instincts, every time I feel a drive to do a certain thing or a desire, even a simple thing like I'm going to go to town with no shoes on. I mean, that sounds like a dumb example, but it's such a small self-expression, right? It's such a small thing that if I want to wear bare feet, maybe a security guard at the mall is going to tell me off, or, something. Maybe people will think I can't afford shoes. I don't know. I just, I think that through. So I follow my instinct. I want to do something, so I go, okay, I'm going to do this. What would that look like? What might happen? What might the outcomes be? So I always do a little bit of catastrophizing, like what's the worst that could happen? Yeah. Oh, a security guard could kick me out of the mall because someone might think there is an OSH health and safety issue and therefore I'm not allowed to be in there with no shoes on. Okay, well then I'll bring my jandals in the car just in case. But I'm not going to not do it because of that risk. Can I live through get a security guard telling me you have to wear shoes in the mall? Yep. Okay, cool. So I'm willing to take that risk.
I quite like that.
And so I do this catastrophizing thing, which I've written about in my book, Good Shit I've Learned. And
good plug there, by the way. Appreciate that.
Oh, see, I knew you'd be proud of me.
I am very proud of you.
And available on Amazon. No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah.
Also on your website, shelleydavies.com.
Also on my website. There we go. So I listen to instinct. I play out what could happen here, what's the risk, what's the worst that could happen. Can I live with that? Do I need to pull back on this decision that I want to make? And then after the fact, I consciously search for evidence of whether it was a bad or a risky or a silly thing to do, or whether there was something good that came out of it, or whether just nothing either way. So I consciously look for evidence. And I think that that's the biggest part of my growth over the last 7 years. Like, change my brand. Right, now I'm going to look for evidence of if this is getting me good results or bad results. Am I getting more business or less business? I'm going to put a swear word in this post. I'm going to see if that gets me bad results or if people really resonate with that and they comment and they engage. Fuck, yes, they engaged. I'm happy. Yeah. I'm going to keep doing that. And I'm not doing that for shock factor. I'm doing it because I'm stepping into my truth. And then I'm looking for evidence to see if I'm safe to continue doing that or not.
So what you're saying is it's not about going and trying to do things just to shock people. It's more if I got kicked out of Brownies when I was a kid for not wearing shoes. So I'm like going, yeah, I'm resonating with the no shoe wearing thing. So like if I go, you know, part of my truth is I don't wear shoes. And in fact, part of my truth is that I wear sneakers instead of heels. So I now wear sneakers with everything. So if I went into a meeting and someone didn't like me for wearing sneakers, I'm like, they're not a client I want to work with. Like that's become a filter. So that's what you're saying. You're not saying shocking for shock's sake. It's more, hey, just go with what's in your psyche. You swear, you love, it's part of who you are. So showing up as someone who swears as part of your marketing automatically shows, if people accept that, then they're accepting who you are. And then that gives you more and more confidence to be who you are to everyone else around you. That's what you're saying, eh? Is that right?
That's exactly it. And like attracts like. So if I swear, then I'm more likely to attract a tribe of people who relate and connect and want to hear what I've got to say.
I 100% love that, because I know that for years, like I started off pretty confident and then I had some shit time going on when I was a teenager and piece of marriage and all that sort of stuff, and I kind of lost who I was, and this has been all about me rediscovering kind of the inner Rachel who actually was around. And this year I've really felt like I've let that person fly. And what's amazing with that is you lose all the people around you that aren't great with you or aren't and you attract all the people who just get who that person is and actually like them, and it becomes this kind of thing where they like you, so you like you, so they like you, so you like you, and it just all works out really nicely.
That's exactly right. When I hear people saying, oh, I wouldn't be able to put that on Facebook, I always think, who the fuck are your friends on Facebook and why are they your friends? Like, we have control over this, you know. There's this thing called unfriend or block or unfollow or whatever. Why would you, you know, I don't understand that.
Yeah, I think it's very liberating. So, and I think what I love is that I love that when you go and do a presentation, that this is part of what you're sharing, isn't it? You're not just teaching about writing plainly. You're talking about showing up and being more confident in who they are in the workplace, where they spend a lot of time in their hours in their life.
Yeah. Just probably 2 weeks ago, I was doing a training with an iwi collective up north in Kaitaia, and it was just brilliant, such an honour to work with people doing such great work, and very relaxed, very comfortable. And towards the end of the second day, someone said to me, you should not call this writing training. There's something more. Like, this is not just writing training. I went, yes, I know, but writing training is what gets me in the door.
Yes.
You know, people know that they need to write better. They know that their documents can be shorter, tighter, you know, more professional, all of that. That's what they want to pay for. And then once I get in the room, then we actually start to talk a huge amount about empathy. Because in my industry, we used to call it being reader-centric, focused on your reader. What we're talking about is being empathetic to your reader's
definitely.
Needs. And if you can't put yourself in your reader's shoes, then you're not writing well, because you're writing for yourself instead of them. And so we talk a lot about empathy, and we talk a lot about authenticity. We talk a lot about, well, what do you actually want to say in this document? What needs to be said? And why can't you just say it like that? Because that is the clearest way to say it. And so, there's a lot of increasing confidence. There's a lot of getting real clarity. And there's a huge amount of permissiveness, permission to be authentic, permission to communicate clearly. which we don't feel powerful if we can't do those things.
Oh, I just absolutely agree. You know, I actually could talk to you about this all day. Thankfully, I'm seeing you later on the week, Shelley, so I can do that. but we have to wind this up. So can you please tell anyone that wants to talk to you or see you, where do they find you? And please give a plug for your cool coffee mug and gratitude journal too, because that would be helpful to people out there.
ShelleyDavies.com, but it's just Shelley, S-H-E-L-L-Y. There's no E-Y. And Davies has got an E. Everyone always gets both those things wrong. if you jump on there, you can find out all about the various trainings that I run. You can find out about my keynotes and speaking, because I've done a TEDx, and there's going to be another one of those coming up
soon.
Or you can jump on there and have a look at my books, Good Shit I've Learned. I've also got one that's called Engaging with Māori for Confidence in Business, or for Success in Business. And coming up to Christmas, you can get a beautiful, badass gratitude journal full of sweariness and joy and beauty and coffee cups, like first we badass, then we coffee cup.
I'm definitely planning to get one of those because I feel like that's a mainstay of my life in the morning.
Oh my God.
Coffee and then badassery.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for coming along. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Awesome.
This has been It's Time to Identify, a podcast from Rachel Klaver from rachelklaver.com. Don't forget to hit subscribe to get the next episode.